Today's show is presented by Prize Picks. Go to prizepicks.com and use code PACKADAY to get $50 instantly after you play your first $5 lineup.
Minutes a day, 365 days a year. This is the Pack-A-Day Podcast.
What is up, everybody? Welcome into an all-new episode of the Pack-A-Day Podcast. I'm your host, Andy Herman. You can follow me on Twitter at Andy Herman NFL. You can find the podcast at Pack-A-Day Podcast. I am joined by my good friend, Grant Bills. You can find him on Twitter at Wisco Grant. Of course, the Wisco Sports Show. Grant, it is great to be chatting with you. How are you doing, my friend?
It's great to be chatting with you. I miss Perry, but I saw she was somewhere tropical within the last week. So very jealous of her, but bummed to miss her. I'm good. Last week, the divisional round, bummer to not have the Packers, but I did really enjoy it without the stress of watching my team or worrying about my team. I'm not going to lie. It was very stress-free, and it was a very enjoyable weekend of football.
Yeah, you know, and the Lions lose. Minnesota gets eliminated the week before. It's been a slightly therapeutic, you know, I think a couple of weeks ever since Green Bay lost. You had those other losses within the division, which certainly helps things a little bit. Good, entertaining football. A nice little underdog story in Washington. A team that we get to hate in Kansas City just kind of because we don't want them to continue to succeed. You know, can Buffalo overcome finally? I think that's sort of a fun little story there. And then I think sort of a team still to cheer against in Philadelphia too. You have a good face heel matchup in both of these. Like, and I think it kind of feels that way nationwide, but it feels like we've seen the Chiefs. All right, let's give Buffalo their opportunity. We've seen Philly, although it's a different iteration of it for sure. But Washington's the darling, the Cinderella of this. It does feel like we have a legitimate face and a heel to cheer for or against in each of these games.
Yeah. And something that jumped out to me from Bills Ravens, which felt like the weightiest game, like the stakes of that game were so huge for both quarterbacks. And the Lamar loss, these are starting to feel Aaron Rodgers-ish. Not that Aaron Rodgers like struggled with turnovers in playoff games. He turned the ball over more, but it's against better defenses. I just listening to the reaction to that Ravens loss, it reminded me of the way we used to talk about Rodgers losing in the playoffs and that it's like, well, the quarterback wasn't perfect, but also the quarterback did enough to win, had the teammate stepped up a little bit, and you talk yourself in a circle trying to figure out why your team keeps losing. Like last year it was the Zay Flowers fumble, and this year it's Mark Daniels. And it reminded me so much of the way we used to talk about, or Mark Andrews, it reminded me so much of the way we used to talk about Rodgers and the Packers losing in the playoffs. So it was nice to be able to view that as a third party, and it's nice to not be in that place as a fan base.
It's interesting. I know obviously you have your radio show, which is fantastic. And always, you know, right before your radio show, there's that radio show that always leads into it. For me, there's a national show that leads into mine. And it, like, one of the things that really struck me is the Bills, of course, beat the Baltimore Ravens this past week. And I'm listening to the lead into my show, and they're talking about how awful of a decision it was for the Bills and their head coach to go for the field goal at the end and not go for the kill and not run it two times and whatever. And it just, like, this has been the ultimate, I think, season that's really just struck me of like, nobody's ever happy. The Bills won that game. The Bills won that game. And the talk radio is blasting Sean McDermott for how he coached the end of that game. And it's like, that is the victor of the biggest game of the weekend, a game that, like you said, felt unbelievable weight to it, right? And just consequences one way or the other. And I'm sure prior to that point, they probably blasted the Ravens and Lamar Jackson and Mark Andrews and all those sort of things. But like, you get to the end of the show and you're even blasting the winning coach. And this is the season that, to me, it really has struck me of that nobody is ever happy. It's like you're going to have one team. Like, we've reached the ultimate peak of, I get every single year, like, oh, one team gets to celebrate and everyone leaves unhappy. But it really almost feels that way now of like 31 fan bases are massively upset that their team either didn't make the playoffs or were eliminated early from the playoffs. And even the team that wins it, it feels like there's you get that celebration, but everyone else is like immediately on to free agency, the draft, and we're already on to 2025. So I don't know. I'm going to be totally transparent. I've struggled with it a little bit more of just like every single franchise, everyone needs to get fired. Everyone needs to get canned. Everyone needs to, like,
everyone sucks.
And the the antithesis is true. Like, there are a bunch of really good football teams that are out there. And Buffalo, you know, and Baltimore, you understood going into that game that there was going to be a Super Bowl contender that was eliminated in the divisional round, because there had to be. There was no other way around it. One of those teams was going home, and there was nothing anyone could do about it. So it's just really hard for me, because I just wish everyone had a little bit more of a empathy and understanding for, again, and I talked about this earlier this week, so I don't want to sit on my soapbox again, but just how difficult it is to win. And I'm not saying that there can't, you know, need to be changes made in some of these organizations, and everyone's going to make their upgrades. Everyone's going to make a couple coaching tweaks here and there. And there's going to be a ton of movement through the course of this offseason, which we get to celebrate and get all geeked out about all over again. But man, there's a lot of good football. There's at least a multitude of good football teams, maybe not a lot, but there's multiple good football teams, and it is really, really, really hard to win at the highest of levels.
This year, more than any other, I've actually started believing coaches when they say it's hard to win in this league. Like, I've for whatever reason this year, maybe it's I've just been doing the media cycle enough when I'm on air every day, or I've been watching football long enough, all of a sudden the light went on. I'm just like, yeah, you know what? It is really hard to win in this league. Like, it's a cliche that everyone says at press conferences, but it's true. I think where frustration from fans and probably from a lot of media people, where the frustration comes from is, sometimes it's your year and sometimes it's your not. And I think we've seen that with the Ravens and the Bills. Like, one of the teams had to lose, to your point. I think what's frustrated most people is it's never the Chiefs. Like, it's never their turn to be left out for, you know, the reasons of a bounce of the ball or a coin flip. You know, although they did lose that game to the Patriots in 18-19 off coin flip in overtime. So it has happened, but that's what drives people so nuts about the Chiefs. And I'm really not anti-Chiefs, because I think they're an awesome heel. I think I'd rather see a new team, but if it is the Chiefs, I'm not going to be miserable, because I think it makes for good entertainment. The Patrick Mahomes flopping along the sideline made me really cool. Like, maybe I do really want to go full anti-Chiefs with my rooting interest. I hated that. But you're absolutely right. Fans, sometimes we need someone to blame. We need someone to get mad at. Sometimes it's just not your Sunday. It's just got to be tough for Ravens fans, because it's felt that way for them every year. Like, it felt that way for Packers fans.
They're the opposite Chiefs. The Ravens are the opposite Chiefs at this point. Yeah.
Yeah.
No, I'm with you. I get it. And again, I understand. We are all upset when our team gets eliminated and doesn't play to the standards that we expect them to. I get it. There's a naturalness of that. And that passion is what makes it all worth it, all exciting. And it makes us all passionate again to see what upgrades are going to happen in the offseason. And it's all a cycle. Bears fans have already convinced themselves that Ben Johnson is the savior and that they are now the best team in the league once again. And the cycle once again continues. Yeah, so I get it. I'm excited. I'm really intrigued with these games. The last thing I'll say on this is, I really enjoyed the Belichick Brady Patriots, because A, they were really good, and B, they always found a way, and C, they were like almost like reinventing themselves. Sometimes they'd be a power run team, sometimes they'd be a dominant passing team, sometimes they'd be a check down merchant. Like, you would see all different versions. Sometimes they'd be a defensive team. They'd be a different team every year and somehow find a way to kind of reinvent themselves and win. This Chiefs team, if this was still the Patrick Mahomes that was throwing, you know, 50 touchdowns a year and just like throwing it all over the field and absolutely dominating, and like, I think I would have like a greater level of admiration and be like, all right, sure, this is not fair. This is like video game cheat code stuff. And it's not necessarily the most fun thing to watch because they're just ripping through everyone. But I think I'd have a greater level of appreciation for like, all right, this is just a special run and we have to kind of appreciate it for what it is. A little bit of Golden State Warriors-esque. But the more recent Chiefs, it's like, they don't even look that entertaining and fun. It's just like they just kind of find really weird ways to kind of win at the end. And again, a very anti-Green Bay Packer, Baltimore Ravens sort of way.
Yeah, and that's what I think I needed to mature a little bit to fully appreciate why the Patriots were so great and why they won so much. Because when I was younger, in my teens or my very early 20s, I was in college and I was watching Brady constantly get it done when Rodgers couldn't. And I'm like, they're not even doing anything that special. I've seen Rodgers throw on the run, flick of the wrist, you know, drop a ball in a bucket at 45 yards. I know Brady can't do that. I know the Patriots can't do that. But as I get older, I'm like, oh, it's not really about that. It's about what play do we need to run and how can everyone, right down to the fraction of the inch, run it perfectly. And if that's a little dump off to a running back and the ball is right in the breadbasket instead of up above the head or down by the knee, like, it's the simple things. And now when I watch the Packers in the playoffs sometimes, I think, no, I wish you would be more like the Patriots. Just do the easy thing. right? Do the non-sexy thing because that's what's going to work in January in the cold or against a good defense. So I weirdly think as I've gotten older, I appreciate the Patriots more. And I think it takes a certain, I don't want to say a maturity, but it takes a certain level of appreciation for this Chiefs team to be like, yeah, they're not sexy, but that's almost the beauty in it. The problem is people are so sick of them. And I think that's where
and same with the Patriots at the time. Absolutely. Was still cheering against them, but it's efficiency and it's execution. And it's like, you know, growing up a wrestling fan, Bret Hart is not exactly the cup of tea for a young fan, right? You want the Undertakers, the Hulk Hogan's, the Shawn Michaels, the Stone Cold Steve Austin's. Like, those are the ones that are really like hitting all the neurons in your brain that are firing when you're 11, 12, 13, 14, 15 years old, etc. Right? Not that those don't fire still today, and those are exciting wrestlers, all of them. But Bret Hart wasn't necessarily the one that you were like, you know, this is what I can't wait to watch. But man, as you grow up and you see the execution and the pride in his craft and the artistry of him, you in your later years gain a much greater appreciation for that. And I think sometimes with sports, it goes the same way of, hey, there's certain times where like, I want to just watch the flashy, sexy, fun team. But then you sort of look at the team that's actually winning and doing it the best of the best. And you're like, man, that's not the sexiest thing in the world, but man, is it executing at an extremely high level? It's the Bret Hart of the NFL. And that's what at times those New England Patriots certainly were.
Well, and it's the team. Remember, to win a Super Bowl, you need to win 3 playoff games at least in a row,
at least,
maybe on the road against good teams. And it's hard to do that if you're not buttoned up and detailed. And you can't do the simple things well. It's hard to get by in 3 straight playoff games on talent and on improvisation. And I think that's something that I've realized. And that's why, like, on my show, when I talk about the Packers going on a Super Bowl run, I try to intentionally word it to win 3 straight playoff games, because that's the task. That's what it takes. And I think that necessitates a certain brand of sometimes simplified football, but really detailed football. And it's not always what's most impressive or most entertaining. And I think as I've gotten older, I appreciate that, even if I sometimes don't like it. And I definitely see that in this iteration of the Chiefs. It's very Patriots-ish.
I'm always reminded of that as well. The Packers in the Matt LaFleur era have won 3 playoff games total. That is enough. If you're not the team with the bye, that's only enough to get you there. And that's, you have to do it all in one postseason. In the entirety of the Matt LaFleur era, they have won 3 postseason games, which if you have a bye and do it all at once, well then you're good. But outside of that, and again, that just goes to show how absolutely tough that this is. 3 playoff games, at least, or, you know, 3 playoff games in a Super Bowl, or 2 playoff games in a Super Bowl, however you want to look at it. Very, very difficult to do. Really quick before we get to our main topic, Ben Johnson hired as Bears coach. I had the opportunity to talk about it yesterday, but just wanted to get your thoughts really quick. Your thoughts on the hiring of Ben Johnson in Chicago.
Well, and I talked about this on my show earlier. I listened to a lot of takes, you know, different podcasts throughout the day, people reacting to this. And this gets back to what you said about, you know, no one's ever happy. You know, this was the number one candidate, the top guy, the top choice. Vrabel was a little different. Vrabel would have been there too, but of the first time head coaches, this was the top choice. The Bears ponied up and got him. And then today I'm listening to podcasts, people on TV and on the radio. It's like, well, you know, first time coaches, he could be Adam Gase. And, you know, will it work? Yeah, it might not work. Of course it might not work. But I guess I'm confused by how many people are like, well, he's never been a head coach before. Because I know if they had hired McCarthy
or Arthur Smith, they'd make fun of
him for it.
Yes.
Like, the Bears would get mocked endlessly if they had hired McCarthy. So that's just the media, right? People are nitpicking, and I get it. Of course, every coaching hire, especially first-time coaching hires, are a gamble. I just don't know how you can really fault the Bears for this. And it seems like so many people are trying to. It might not work, but I don't think you can argue with this process.
I'm there with you. I think I talked about it yesterday. I think in order for it to work, they have to really address the foundation of the organization. It can't just be another fresh coat of paint. It just can't be the new flavor of the week in Ben Johnson. At the same time, I don't know what you could have possibly asked for more in Ben Johnson, Dennis Allen, and then Rizzi, the special teams coordinator. Like, that's about as good of a trio as you could possibly hope for if you were a Bears fan. Again, I'll believe that it, you know, comes to fruition and that they're actually something special when I see it. And I think there's things that this organization needs to address well above and beyond just new coach, coordinators, and scheme. But it's about as good of a possible outcome as you could want if you were a Bears fan.
And I think the scheme, and I am not an X's and O's all 22 guy, But the change from Jared Goff to Caleb Williams is a big one. The Lions ran play action with the frequency and the effectiveness that was basically top of the league, right? And Caleb Williams is just about one of the worst play action quarterbacks in football. And I don't know that that's his skill set anyways. So I think more of a like a Favre Holmgren, Reed Mahomes, where the play caller is calling plays in their structure, but it's almost designed in a way where this talented quarterback that likes to freelance kind of stumbles on the right read and kind of gets to discover it for himself. And that's so different from what they were doing with the Lions, and their personnel is different, right? The strength is more in the weapons and the arm talent of the quarterback rather than in the line. And I think Ben Johnson could do it. I'm not saying that he's not capable of changing schemes. I'm as a football fan, you know, curious more than anything, what he cooks up for Caleb Williams and the environment that he tries to create around him. I'm excited to see, but he's definitely going to have to do something very different than he did in Detroit.
Yeah, he's going to have to reinvent it. He's going to have to, I think, help Caleb Williams reinvent himself. And I think that's going to be one of the really key storylines in the NFL next year, much less in the NFC North and for Chicago. It certainly will be worth keeping an eye on. All right, Grant, let's get to our main topic for today. And that is, of course, Green Bay Packers, and more specifically, the biggest offseason questions that are surrounding this team. So we were going to do this, you, me, and Perry. Unfortunately, Perry was unable to get into the show today, not feeling the best, but we will still go through it. And I want to start with you. I will let you go in any direction that you want. What is your biggest 1A question that surrounds this Packers team as we get headed into the offseason?
I think my number one question is with the ceiling of this wide receiving core.
Yeah.
Because they were so flashy as rookies, and I was so excited about all of them. And maybe our expectations were too high for year two. To be fair, maybe, probably, just like expectations were probably too high for the Texans. We always maybe get out over our skis. But after year two, I'm like, okay, so Jaden Reed didn't really take a leap. Wicks definitely didn't, although I think he still did a lot of good things and had a better second half of the year and probably did better than most fans would tell you. Watson is basically out of the mix now. Dobbs, I still really like, but now I worry about his head. You know what I mean? Like, that's scary. He suffered two pretty nasty looking concussions in a short span. So I think that's my number one question, especially, I guess, Reed and Wicks. Like, are they going to be able to take the leap next year that we expected this year? Because if not, wide receiver is a huge need, especially if Dennis Allen is going to be calling, you know, sticky man defenses in Chicago. That's another defense that they'll have to contend with, the likes of which that they've struggled with. So my biggest offseason question is about the ceiling of that group for sure.
I had 12 questions on my list. This was not specifically one of them. I had sort of, I'll just add mine in here for the moment. And that's, does this team have enough playmaking and star power overall? But I think that applies to wide receiver. And I think it applies to the team as a whole. Man, I would have bet so much money, Grant. And I mean so much money. And I'm not even a gambling guy. I would have bet so much money that there would have been no chance, and I mean 0% chance, that not a single wide receiver from that group of six took a, I would have even probably said significant step forward, but even a single tiny baby step forward, and everyone either stayed status quo, which is arguable if any of them even stayed status quo, maybe Dobbs, maybe Wick's second half of the season. I think good Jaden Reed when he showed up was sort of what we saw in that rookie season, but not a single one took a step forward, and multiple of them took a step backwards, in my opinion. And the receiving group as a whole took a step backwards. I just never would have fathomed that. Knowing what we saw in 2023, some of the upsides, some of the peaks, some of the real potential star-making plays that we saw this past year, for none of that really to feel like it came to fruition at all in 2024 is one of the biggest stunning things to me of the entirety of this season. I don't know why that happened. I don't know what the disconnect was. I wish I had a better answer to it, but it does change the calculus, along with the Christian Watson injury, along with Watson and Dobbs being free agents in 2026. It does very much change the calculus of this wide receiver room. Not to mention, you look at the individual metrics and how this team really struggled to get off of man coverage, save for Christian Watson. And again, we basically have to, you know, take Christian Watson and completely put him to the side. Yep. And say, I'm not sure if that's going to be a thing anymore. And with that in mind, you do have the potential where you just don't have the receivers to get off of man coverage when you need to, which, oh, by the way, is a significant problem going into next year. So I am with you. I would have never expected us to be having this conversation, specifically me talking about Green Bay needing a potential number one wide receiver. Never expected it to go this way, yet here we are. And I do think it is a significant question for this team and where they can get that playmaker from at the top of the wide receiver room.
Well, and I've heard so many Packers people since the end of the year say, well, I guess we were wrong. You do need to go get a number one wide receiver. I don't think that's true. I just think they need these guys to emerge more than they did. Now, if you tell me right now, and I know for certain that Jaden Reed and Wicks and all these guys next year aren't going to take this step, well, then yes, it's a need and you need to go get someone. But I still, I don't know that they need to go get, I also don't think acquiring T. Higgins just solves all these problems. But like, yeah, if you were to try to trade up to get like a stud wide receiver in the first round, which seems very anti-Packers, like, if you could tell me that these guys were going to progress and take a step, I don't think that's necessary. I don't think it's, well, no, you do need a number one wide receiver. No, I think the problem was these guys didn't progress like we thought. That was the issue, not necessarily that they didn't have a true stud number one wide receiver.
Yeah, I think that's fair. And just to kind of go back to mine for a second, I'm still, you know, of the overall feel, I like a lot of the players on this team. I think it's a really good team. I think they have a lot of depth. I don't think there's a ton of weaknesses. And I think if guys play up to expectations, it's a really, really, really good team. I still look at this team right now and I see Xavier McKinney as a star in the secondary as a safety, first team all pro, deservedly so. He's a stud all day, every day. I see Josh Jacobs. I think he's a great running back. I think you can run into other great running backs. I don't necessarily know that he is a ultimate differentiator, meaning that the difference between your team and another playoff team is going to just be Josh Jacobs, but yeah, I'll even put him in that category as a star. And he put the team on his back as much as he could in that playoff game. So regardless, I'm going to put him in that category as well. It's really difficult for me at the moment to get anyone else really in that category. Zach Tom, I think, is a really good right tackle. I didn't think he was quite as good as even I expected him to be going into this season. I thought he struggled a little bit more with the bull rush and definitely struggled in that playoff game at the end. And then it just, again, gets tough. Jair Alexander, whether he's back or not, has not been that same player. Rashawn Gary has never really been that player. Kenny Clark came close to that player in his prime, like a all-pro caliber player, although never
wreck a game.
Got there, but he's not there anymore. Certainly he was mostly, you know, average level play this season. Edrian Cooper, I think, is in the conversation to get to that level. I still think Jordan can get to that level, but Tucker Kraft maybe can get to that level. I still think there is a pretty sizable gap when you look at some of the best teams and the stars and the all pros that they have and where Green Bay's at. I think they need to close that gap, and I think they need a couple more big time difference makers, whether it's at wide receiver or somewhere else on this roster, if they really want to compete at the highest levels. Well, that was a really fun weekend of football, and while I'm definitely bummed out that the season is coming to an end, we've got two more epic games this weekend and still plenty of time to do some winning on Prize Picks. And the best way to get in on the action on Conference Championship Sunday is with Prize Picks, where you can win up to 1,000 times your money, and it's no wonder that Prize Picks is the best place to get real money action while watching the playoffs. Prize Picks offers a variety of weekly promotions that can lead to big payouts. And don't forget that there are plenty of other sports available to play as well. And it's never a bad time to get in on all the basketball action. And I think I'm going to be keeping an eye out for some Giannis options this week. This Sunday, however, I'm going to go with Jaden Daniels and Saquon Barkley to put on an epic show in Philly while Josh Allen finally puts his team over the top and gets Buffalo into Super Bowl Sunday. If you're ready to start winning, then download the app today and use code PACKADAY to get $50 instantly after you play your first $5 lineup. That's $50 instantly after you play your first $5 lineup by using code PACKADAY. What are you waiting for? Prize Picks, run your game.
Well, can I give you my next question? Because it'll pile on.
Let's go.
How badly do the Raiders want to hold on to Max Crosby? Because I know it's a pipe dream. I know it's a pipe dream. We had a Pete Doherty on Bill's show last week, and Pete is as straight a shooter as you'll talk to. And he's like, look, it's not the Packers thing to do. It's not the type of thing that they do. But if there was ever a time and there was ever a player, you'd have to think long and hard about this one. So yeah. Maybe it's a pipe dream and maybe it's something we don't need to talk about for a long time, but man, isn't that just the type of move you could see on a championship documentary down the line? It's like, that was the difference. That was the thing. You know, maybe I'm talking like a casual, I don't know, like Julius Peppers in 14 or Charles Woodson in 2010 or Reggie White. Like, I think the rest of them seem like T. Higgins seems so impossible and Myles Garrett seems so impossible. Max Crosby might just not be impossible. And I think they have to have meetings about it. So that's something that's rattling around in my brain.
So here's the first thing I'll tell you from a good news side of things. I'll give you good news and I'll give you bad news. The good news is, The thing that struck me most about Brian Gutekunst's press conference was basically the closing remarks, where he said, we need to have a level of urgency. Yes. It's time to start winning championships. And if I'm Brian Gutekunst and I'm going to say those comments, I better be ready to back them up myself. If I say those comments and say, hey, we as an organization need to have a sense of urgency, and I draft a 20-year-old project, you know, tackle or whatever in the first round.
Yeah.
That's not going to probably go over very well, right? If it's another class of draft and develop guys. And again, I'm not saying that you can't live in that world, but if that's what you do after saying those comments, it doesn't really, you know, resonate very well, right? I do wonder if Goody starts looking at this and saying, hey, you know, when we won it in 96, we went out and got a Reggie White. When we won it in 2010, we went out and got a Charles Woodson. And it's not that he hasn't tried to do like Xavier McKinney, Josh Jacobs, even Za'Darius Smith, pretty significant signings for this organization, no question about it. But I do wonder if he's wondering if like, hey, if we're going to do this, I need to really put the money where the mouth is and make a home run swing at this thing. And maybe that's a Max Crosby. Maybe that's something entirely different. I'm not sure. There's not that one A free agent that fits so perfectly like Xavier McKinney last year. We had conversation. I was going back and looking at some of the podcasts we did that around this time last year. We were talking about Xavier McKinney as the ultimate 1A perfect free agent for Green Bay at about this time, a month before free agency even started last year, where you could easily look at the puzzle pieces and be like, this just makes all the sense in the world. Mm-hmm. And you could easily fit it. I don't think there is that free agent out there for Green Bay that is that perfect 1A fit. There's some really strong fits, but I don't think it's that perfect fit. And so maybe you have to be a little bit more creative, and maybe that is via a trade. That's the good news, is I think there could be an aggressiveness and urgency to Goody that maybe he wants to get something like that done. One other piece is these are the sort of players that Green Bay has shown interest in the past. Guys that are all pro caliber players, like a Julius Peppers, a Charles Woodson, a Reggie White, even going after guys like Khalil Mack when they became available, that didn't work out, but like Julius Peppers, like these are the sort of players at premium positions that if they are going to make a deal, even like a Jimmy Graham, I know it didn't work out, but he was a big time all pro performer that he wanted to bring in. These are the sort of guys that they do tend to look at and say, let's at least talk about this. So those are the good news. The bad news that I would say is first and foremost, we don't even know if Max Crosby is even remotely going to become available from the Raiders. So that's hard news number one. Even if he does become available and the Raiders just say, all right, he's NFL, have at it, send us your best offers. I find it very, very difficult to believe that when there are 31 competing teams to some extent for Max Crosby, that the team that makes the highest offer for Max Crosby is your Green Bay Packers. And to Pete Doherty's point, it's not exactly in their DNA. And the hard part is, they might be a player away. Maybe that's the case. And if there is a player away, maybe it very much is Max Crosby. But to invest, let's say, a first round pick, a second round pick, a fourth round pick, and you know, maybe all those combined to what it would take, plus what's probably going to amount to a $35 million contract per year at some point as an extension, to put all of that and all of those eggs into one basket. If there's one basket you want to put it in, that's not a bad basket to put it in. It's just, it's so far away from Green Bay's DNA that I would be pretty stunned if Green Bay was the team that gave all of that to go out and get a Max Crosby.
So I don't disagree with a single word that you just said. Goody's comments, those comments struck me as well. And there was another comment or two that he made that I maybe wrapped up into another question that we can talk about. I just wonder if Goody looks around the division and the Packers front office looks around the division, what's going on with the Vikings lines. And I understand there's some uncertainty. The Vikings probably going to change quarterbacks. Maybe they lose their DC, seeming less likely now, but we'll see. The Lions are going to have to replace a ton of people, and the Bears, who knows? I'm done assuming that the Bears are going to figure it out until they actually do. Last year was the last time. I'm like, no, this year they'll be good this year for sure. I'm not going to do that again. I just wonder if Goody looks around at the division and says, I don't know that we're keeping up. I don't know that we're good enough. And also, look around the rest of the NFC. The West is down as a whole. Stafford's old. The Niners are kind of betwixt in between. They're rebuilding. The Cardinals are the Cardinals. The Seahawks have Geno. Like, it's not a landscape in the NFC filled with juggernauts. Like, we might walk away from this weekend, if not already, thinking Jaden Daniels is just the best quarterback in the NFC. You're not dealing with Mahomes, Allen. You're not dealing with that in your conference. So the conference might be winnable. The division might ratchet up your sense of urgency. I just wonder if some of the outside factors might come together in a way that push the Packers over the edge and push them a little bit farther than they would have normally gone in the past. I don't know. It's definitely worth talking about. I wouldn't build, you know, hours and hours and hours of my show or your podcast around it, but it's definitely worth talking about, I guess.
I think so too. And my question here too is, how aggressive will Goody be in free agent or just in period free agency, trade, draft, etc.? And I put urgency in parentheses of like, just how urgent does Goody want to be? Does he want to, you know, borrow a little bit more from the future? I'm not even talking about necessarily salary cap wise. I'm talking about future draft capital to make a big splash trade or whatever it might take. Let me a side question on this. The draft is in Green Bay, right?
Yep.
And there's this idea that they can't trade their first round pick because the draft is in Green Bay.
Yeah.
I think there might be something a little bit to that. At least there's going to be maybe some pressure from the powers that be to have a draft pick. But let me ask you this. What if Green Bay did not make a draft pick on draft day, but when Green Bay was on the clock, it was announced that there's been a trade and that trade was for one Max Crosby. Would that solidify the desire and need to have a big splash moment in Green Bay when the draft is in Green Bay?
I think 10 out of 10 Packers fans would take that over. Here's another toolsy edge rusher, or here's another, you know what I mean? Not that well, those
definitely
guys
got a toolsy edge rusher in this scenario, but a proven toolsy edge rusher in this scenario.
Yeah. I think that dog would hunt. I think Packers fans would get over it. Although that comes up a lot on sports radio with commenters and callers. That has, it's been coming up for like a year now. Like, and I don't know if it'll get, become a more frequent talking point closer to the draft or if we've, you know, kind of saturated that thing, but it comes up a lot. So it's funny that you mentioned that.
I wonder where that pressure, if it did happen, would come from. Is that like a Mark Murphy thing of like, hey, you need a, is this an NFL thing of like, hey, you, it, like, listen, if your draft's going to be in Green Bay, you need to have a first round pick, something like that. Listen, what I'll say is this. There are ways around this, right? Like even if they needed to trade away their first round pick, they could take a second and a future second or a second and a third and move back up into the first round if they needed to. Like there are ways to end up with probably pick 32 and trade away their initial draft pick if that's absolutely what they needed to do. I think there's ways that would be workable, but yeah, I don't know. I don't know how much of a factor that it is. I don't know where it would come from. I am intrigued if there would actually be any external pressure. More of just a fun question than anything else.
Yeah. And look, if you're someone who's spending the money to make the trip to Green Bay for the draft, to stand outside and basically listen to people read names, if that's your thing, if that's enough for you, I don't know that you're going to walk away peeved that the Packers didn't make a pick. You strike me as someone who just wants to be around the NFL and wants to be a part of the pageantry. I don't know that there's people going to Green Bay. Like I am specifically going to hear them read a name in person. You know what I mean? Like maybe I could be wrong. But, and there's also second, third, fourth round. There's other.
I went to the draft in Vegas. I can tell you, Grant, it is not a spectator sport. You find out on your phone 10 minutes before every pick, you know, still like, you know, I think it was, you know, Derek Stingley has been selected by the Texans. And then you're just sitting in a crowd of thousands of people. There's nothing going on. There's nobody breaking down the picks. There's nothing going on. And then 10 minutes later, somebody comes up to the podium and says, "The Houston Texans have selected Derek Stingley. I'm two picks ahead already on my phone. I already knew Derek Stingley 10 minutes ago." It is not a spectator sport. I love that the draft's in Green Bay. It's cool. It's a really unique event. There's a bunch of other stuff going on that you can go and do, but just sitting in a crowd of thousands of people to hear a name be read that's already popped up on your phone 15 minutes ago, it's not the coolest experience in the world, if I'm being totally honest.
And I was going to stop short of saying that, but since you did, yeah, it wouldn't be my thing. But people who are going, again, they just strike me as people who want to go. I don't know that their night is going to be ruined that the Packers traded away a pick, especially if it's for someone like Max Crosby. Like, I think folks will be.
Yeah. Fine. My friend and I stood there for about the first 8 to 9 picks somewhere in there. And then we're like, let's go play. We went and played at the casino. Like that was, it was about, and we'll just get the updates on our phone. And that was about the gist.
There's a lot to do in Vegas.
There's a lot more to do in Vegas than stand in a crowd as names are being read off that you can just get on your phone, especially with if there was like some incentive of like, there was somebody really cool there, like breaking it down that you got to hear different, or if you got to hear the pick first, maybe that would be something different, but no, it did not work that way. All right. I digress. All right. What other questions you got to throw out here? If you have any more.
This is a deeper thought question. I mean, it's not rocket science here, but
love it.
What kind of improvement do Goody and Matt LaFleur so obviously expect to see with a different defensive line coach? Because it was clear between Matt LaFleur's press conference and Brian Gutekunst's press conference, they expected a lot more from that group than they got. And it didn't necessarily read to me that they were disappointed that the players weren't as good as they expected. They seemed to think and communicate, these guys were better than the results showed. We saw it in flashes, but it wasn't maintained. Matt LaFleur at some point said, we have to put the work in, which is interesting. I don't know, like, what improvement are the powers in Green Bay expecting with ostensibly a better defensive line coach or defensive line coach that fits their vision better? Is it a huge improvement? Because if they think that that's in there, that's significant. That's a huge deal.
It's a really fun question, and I'm glad you brought this one up. I think to me, it's more of like, let's go back to Joe Barry, Jeff Hafley, just for a second here. Sure. Like, when you looked at all the investments that the Packers put into defense, right? Even but you know, prior to this year, all the first round picks, all the big free agent signings, all the money, all the draft capital. We don't need to go through it. There was what, like at one point, 8 or 9 first round picks, and then a couple other big free agent signings, something to that extent on that defense in the Joe Barry era. And you did not get anywhere near the return on investment of those, you know, draft picks and free agent signings, and your defense was still not good. So you have to come to one of two conclusions. Number one, you invested in the wrong players, or number two, you do not have the right person utilizing those players the way that they are supposed to. And if we're being totally honest, even if it was the fact that the players and the ROI, it was you invested in the wrong players, you can't replace 8 or 9 first round picks and a bunch of big, you know, free agent contracts, yeah. Right? So the only thing left really to do is to say, well, it's got to be the coach. So we're going to change out the coach, and we're going to try a new scheme, and we're going to try to reinvent this thing. You know, maybe add in a few more investments, like an Edgerrin Cooper, a Javon Bullard, an Evan Williams, a Xavier McKinney into this thing, and let's really see if we can get this thing cooking. And thankfully for the Packers defense, that was the case. A couple more investments. Jeff Hafley comes to town, and we saw, I think, a pretty significant improvement from Joe Barry to Jeff Hafley this past season. I think to some extent, this is the same exact conversation, just on the defensive line instead of the defense as a whole. I think when you have a first-round pick in Devontae Wyatt, a first-round pick and a huge contract in Rashawn Gary, first-round pick in LVN, first-round pick and a huge contract into Kenny Clark, you know, other, you know, developmental players like Kingsley Nibari, Carl Brooks, Colby Wooden. You obviously had Preston Smith this past year as well. I'm probably missing a player too, but like when you, TJ Slayton, when you have that much invested into that front and they're not performing, at least from a pass rush standpoint, up to expectations, I think you cannot jettison Rashawn Gary, Kenny Clark because of their contracts. You're certainly not moving on from LVN at this point. Devontae Wyatt, your only decision there is if you picked up his fifth year option or not. So you can't really move on from those guys. The only other thing that you can, and you just changed the scheme, so you can't change the scheme. The only thing left is that coach, and hopefully somebody new in the room can get the most out of those guys. Whether that can happen or not will remain to be seen. I really like the group of coaches that they've interviewed so far. But to me, this is just about, can you get some new ideas in that room, unlock that potential, and hope that they can play better in 2025?
So you grind the tape. You watch the All-22. You tell me, yeah, that Minnesota game, I saw a lot of clips on Twitter, the second Minnesota game, the one at US Bank. I saw a lot of clips of Kenny Clark and Rashawn Gary bumping into each other. I saw clips of Minnesota seemingly knowing what was coming. Like, I think, yeah, they had a pretty good read on stuff. So is that coaching? Is that technique? Is that the way that a game plan is implemented? And is that in any way connected to the types of things that we're talking about? Because that's, you know, I can read the comments of LaFleur and Goody from last, yeah, week and understand why they made the move. That's the actual game example I go back to as kind of an extension of this whole conversation.
We started this conversation today by, you know, the efficiency and the attention to detail, right? The execution. Those, yep, are all attention to detail execution things. And yes, I think you get the right coach in there that's making sure that when you're running a twist or a stunt, you're doing it at the right levels and at the right angles so that you're not having a collision between your two best, theoretically best defensive linemen and basically taking each other out of the play. Yes, those are things that you can, I think, coach and make sure that you have drilled down to a science so that they know exactly what they're doing, how they're going to attack, and how they can help each other rather than run into each other. I think those are definitely things that can help. I will say, I don't think it gets talked about enough how much the defensive line, linebackers, really almost everyone to a T on this defense, really improved their run defense this past year. I thought Rashawn Gary and LVN were two really key examples of that, where their run defense was markedly better than I had seen in the past. And I do think that that deserves at least a mention here. And I even talked about it like 3/4 of the way through the season of like, hey, I wonder to some extent if this, like, we all love to think that you can make all of these changes all at once. I think I was talking to Mike Wall about this at the time, but like, it's really difficult to do everything. So you almost wonder if the first iteration and the first thing that Jeff Hafley really understood and recognized is, we're not going to get anywhere if we don't have a foundation of a good run defense. So we've got to get everyone ingrained in all the technique work and all the everything that we have the opportunity to do needs to be really focused in on run defense. And once we get that down, we can make those next steps into all the attention detail on twists and stunts and pass rush moves and things like that. It's oversimplifying it. It's probably not entirely the case, but I do want to point out, I do think the run defense got a lot better. I don't know if that was at the expense of better pass rush, but now the next step is clearly going to be, can you get that pass rush back hooking?
Well, and for the final month of the season, I brought this up on my show all the time. It's like, guys, I think, you know, they stopped the run against the Niners who didn't have McCaffrey and the Saints who didn't have a back. Like, there were some games where they were really stopping the run. And I said, you know what? I don't know that they're going to be able to rush the passer and cover really well against the Vikings and Lions, but this run defense seems like it's sticky. We have a lot of sample this year of them being very sound against the running game. And if there was a place to start as a defensive coordinator in year one, I love that is the place to start, because if we stop the run on first and second down, we can at least get into third and passing situations and have opportunities for Rashawn Gary or Xavier McKinney to make a play. As we saw against the Vikings and the Lions, they didn't, right? The pass rush had so many opportunities on third down at US Bank to go and get off the field. They just couldn't. But I tell you what, Andy, it sure beats the hell out of getting gashed by 7-8 yard runs on first down. And it's like, you never even have a chance as a defense when you can't get into third in passing situations, you know? So if that was step number one for Jeff Hafley, I love it as a step number one. And maybe it came at the expense of the pass rush. I was very struck by LaFleur and Gutekunst's comments about the D-line. They were very strong. It's obviously clear they had an expectation that wasn't being met. And I don't know anything about those candidates that we learned about earlier today or yesterday, but they come from teams where I'm like, yeah, that's a good pass rush, or that's a good defensive line, whatever that's worth.
Yep. And it's the hardest thing to know of, like, I say this all the time of, like, I don't know how to evaluate assistant coaches all that well, other than to say, this is my expectation for the defensive linemen going into the season. How many of them met those expectations? How many were below expectations? How many were above expectations? And if there's not really anyone that's overachieving, a couple players that are achieving and everyone else is underachieving, all right, I don't really like how that individual coach is doing. That's all I can really go off of. We don't really get to see too much else to really understand too much else of what they're doing. But when you have multiple players that are underachieving and not getting the ROI at that spot, probably time to go in a different direction. And clearly Green Bay felt that way and moved on from Jason Rebrovich. And we'll see if that next defensive line coach can unlock exactly that. All right, I got a couple lightning round ones here for you. Just some simple ones that a lot of people have talked about already. Will the Packers release Jaire Alexander? I still think that's a question. Do you have a take on it?
It just seems like it probably makes sense. Yeah. I would like to talk myself into a way where it makes sense for him to come back, but I just don't understand really how they could continue like this.
Quay Walker and Devontae Wyatt, fifth year options. Do either of those get picked up?
I feel like probably not, but that's not really my wheelhouse. They seem to me very Darnell Savage, where it's like, hey, you do some nice things and we like you, but we don't know that we want to financially commit to you long term.
I do think Goody learned his lesson from Darnell Savage, and even like Jordan Love, he didn't want to give that fifth year option to right away and wanted to make some sort of compromise. I think there will be compromises here, whether it be, we're going to meet you in the middle, we're going to guarantee a good chunk of this, but you're going to have to earn some on the other side with incentives, which is exactly what they did with Jordan Love, to the point where Jordan could have even earned more than what his fifth year option would have been if he hit certain benchmarks, which he probably did. I'd have to go back and look at it from 2023 if he did that or not. But either way, I think that could be something that he uses here, or maybe it's just a long-term extension that makes sense for both sides. But I think something gets done. I don't think it's just we're not going to pick it up and that's it. I think they figure out a compromise with both of those players. That's basically a pseudo fifth year option that's beneficial for both sides.
I think with Quay specifically, I want to see him for a full year next to Edgerrin Cooper when he's fully kind of in the system. They're both fully healthy. And I also, you know, Quay had a bad couple of weeks, but I give him credit. I think he was really gutting through an injury at the end of the year, that ankle. Like, I think he fought really hard to come back and play. And I don't know. I would like to see him in that situation. He hasn't been a game-breaking linebacker like maybe we hoped, but I would like to see him for another year next to Cooper, for sure.
I'm going to read you 8 remaining questions that I have on my board here. And you can either give me one or two that stand out the most that you want to take a stab at. Some of these are more rhetorical slash just kind of questions I have, and maybe they all are. So we don't have to, if there's nothing that strikes your fancy, but here are my 8 remaining questions. How does Green Bay spend their money? Because I do think they're going to have a variety of different ways that they could go about. I think they're going to spend in some capacity. So how do they utilize that money? Kind of goes back to the question of how aggressive are they going to be? How quote unquote urgent are they going to be? I'm going to come back to number 2 on my list. I'm going to save that one for the end. Will there be an Aaron Jones or Josh Jacobs-esque surprise? Meaning like we just never saw that coming. Like could there like... I don't know of anyone that was going into the first day of free agency being like, you know what I bet happens? I bet they sign Josh Jacobs and cut Aaron Jones. I mean, that was completely blindsiding to the point where even when they signed Josh Jacobs, there was that, you know, 30-minute period where like, oh my God, Aaron Jones and Josh Jacobs, what's that going to look like?
Right. Yeah.
Like we didn't even want to like, you know, cross that bridge of being like, oh, wait. No. That's not
I wish we got 24 hours. So we could have at least made some content about it.
There you go. You know what I mean? We got 20 minutes, I think, somewhere around there. What do these coaching changes entail? There's going to be a new quarterbacks coach. There's going to be a new defensive line coach. We kind of discussed that already. Does Jeff Hafley get the Jets job? It certainly does not seem like that's going to be the case, but how could that affect the team? Are there any other potential changes that could take place? But I just think in general, what does that look like? What does the rest of the NFC North look like? We already see Ben Johnson is going to be the head coach in Chicago. They've got some good coordinators coming in as well. You know, Detroit is going to lose Ben Johnson. It looks like they're going to lose Aaron Glenn as well. We just heard that Kevin O'Connell got an extension. The Vikings have some unbelievable decisions at quarterback to make with what they're going to do with Sam Darnold and JJ McCarthy and how that thing's going to look. Like there are plenty of discussions to be had. Does Brian Flores get a head coaching job somewhere? And then who do they bring in as defensive coordinator? Who do the Lions bring in as coordinators? And then of course, draft free agency trades for those 3 teams as well, who I'm sure are all going to be pretty ultra aggressive this offseason. Bears have a ton of money to spend, and I think they're going to be aggressive to try to put an offensive line probably around Caleb Williams. What does the NFC North look like? Green Bay's draft priorities, what do they think that they need to address come draft time? Kind of goes without saying a little bit. Does the special teams just stay status quo? Certainly seems like Rich Bisaccia is going to save his job and stay around another year. Daniel Whalen, it sounds like they want Brandon McManus back, Matt Orzech. Do they get a new returner? Those are some, but is this mostly just going to be the same special teams? Which of Green Bay's own free agents will be back? There's the, you know, Eric Stokes, Josh Myers, TJ Slayton, Brandon McManus. There's a smattering of guys, but nothing super, you know, ultra important, maybe outside of Brandon McManus. And then last but not least, this is not one that we can specifically answer in the offseason, I guess. But I think one of the biggest questions now going into this offseason is, who is the real Jordan Love? Is he the one that we really saw peak in 2013 and show flashes of in 2023 and show flashes of in 2024? Or is it the one that's just kind of up and down and you're not sure which Jordan Love you're going to get in any given week? So again, not something that can specifically be answered during the offseason, but I think it's one of the biggest questions going into the offseason. Take it away from there, sir. After all the holiday hustle and bustle and spending on about 100 things that you didn't expect to spend money on, the start of the new year can feel like a hangover for your credit. And with the holidays over, it's time to start setting those credit goals for 2025, and it's time to start using Kickoff. Now, my experience personally with Kickoff has been incredible. I found Kickoff online, and I immediately started seeing positive changes in my credit. It was so easy to get set up and get started, and I was immediately impressed by how seamless the entire process was. Now, Kickoff is a credit line that's just set up distinctly for credit building. It's super simple. You make one-time payments, credit bureaus see your good behavior, and your credit grows fast. And if your credit's under 600, you could jump like 28 points in your first month. And the best part is that you can start building credit immediately for only $1 for your first month. And when you sign up, you'll quickly find out, like I did, why Kickoff is the number one credit building app with over 100,000 positive reviews on the App Store. So shake off your credit hangover and look forward to better credit with Kickoff. Get your first month for just $1 at getkickoff.com/packaday today. That's 80% off Kickoff. Without the C, get KIKOFF.com/packaday. Must sign up via getkickoff.com/packaday to activate the offer. Offer applies to new customers first month only. Subject to approval. Offer subject to change. Terms and conditions may apply. Point stat based on Equifax Vantage Score 3.0 changes for kickoff users starting under 600 who made their first on-time payment between January 2021 and March 2024. Payment and credit activity outside kickoff can have an impact on your credit. Individual results may vary.
Well, on Jordan Love, I wanted to ask something along those lines, because if you were listening to this podcast, you would have to be thinking, well, guys, the biggest deal is by far Jordan Love, because if he's the guy, you know, that we've seen at his worst, nothing else matters. The thing is, that's not really a good podcast topic because we can't know. We don't know. So I'm with you. That's probably the biggest question, but probably not the most interesting one on the podcast. The quick on free agents, McManus, I agree. What about a guy? McDuffie's a free agent, right? Mm-hmm. I kind of like him as a rotational backer. I kind of like having him around. So that was one guy. That's one name, especially because he had some familiarity with Jeff Hafley, didn't he? Or maybe he didn't. I don't know.
So here's the curtain. I will pull back a little bit on, on NFL general managing 101, right? Nobody cares about Isaiah McDuffie. let me put it that way, like in the nicest way possible.
Yeah.
What I mean by that is every NFL GM, for the most part, would rather take a random sixth round flyer at linebacker as your number four or five guy over Isaiah McDuffie, because you know exactly what Isaiah McDuffie is. There is no ceiling there. Isaiah McDuffie's ceiling is your number four, number five linebacker, solid special teams guy. And he's, in all likelihood, not to put any sort of label or ceiling on Isaiah McDuffie, but 99 times out of 100, that's exactly who you're going to get is Isaiah McDuffie. And the sixth round pick could be, you know, the next unbelievable sixth round draft pick. And you are somebody in the NFL until you have enough tape out there on you that you know, all right, I know exactly who that guy is. And that's not to say there's a really good chance that Isaiah McDuffie is probably better than that random fifth, sixth round pick that you bring in. If you were just to say, I need one play out there right now. Do I want Isaiah McDuffie or that random fifth or sixth round pick or some free agent flyer that you're going to take a chance on that was maybe a former first round pick that kind of flamed out, but you want to give him a shot to redeem himself in a new spot. You might say on that one play, I would much rather have Isaiah McDuffie, but Isaiah McDuffie is not going to change your win totals in any sort of significant way. He's not going to be the difference maker as to whether or not you win or lose a game. He's not going to be the guy that gets you over the top. So you would much rather take a random lottery ticket and just say, yeah, this lottery ticket is probably worse than what I have, but I would rather have the lottery ticket and maybe it pays off to something bigger than just another Isaiah McDuffie. And that's not to say that they won't necessarily bring him back. It's probably going to be financial and what kind of cost he wants and things like that. But I will just say from like a GM standpoint, I don't think Goody's even necessarily really even worried about, like, you know, they'll make an offer maybe and be like, hey, do you want this? And if he's like, no, all right. And he's like, yes, like, all right. And I think that's probably the gist of it.
Well, it's cheaper too, obviously, to go with the draft pick, right? To
boot. Usually,
and the lack of a ceiling is obviously a very good point. Usually, yeah, it depends. The rest of the division, so you mentioned the Lions and the Vikings. It seems less likely now than it did a week ago that Flores gets a job, but who knows, right?
I agree.
A ton could change. It seems like, I mean, Schefter reported Friday, Johnson and Glenn are getting jobs.
Yeah.
The rest of it is kind of up in the air. What I don't think a lot of people talk about, and I'm not trying to say that the Lions are going to bust, because Dan Campbell might just rebuild his staff and they might be awesome again next year. But it's not just Glenn and Johnson who are leaving, right? They could try to take other assistants with them. Like, or, you know, a guy like Hank Fraley was interviewing in Seattle, their offensive line coach, who I would assume has been a huge part of their success, right? Because that unit's been awesome in the way that they block and some of the combos, the way that they, you know, unique setups and things like that. And another thing I was thinking about today, a lot of times when coordinators leave, a lot of times they can attract outgoing free agents to sign with them in their new spot. Like, look no further than Washington. Dan Quinn brings Fowler Jr. with him and he has a 10 sack season and the familiarity was there, right? Yeah. Or Flores in Minnesota got Van Ginkle and a bunch of guys to come play with him there. So it's more like Detroit's already losing two coordinators. I guess my point is it's probably the footprint of it's probably going to be even more than that. And Detroit might keep it together, but I think some of those other factors are often we skate by those as fans or as media members. The last thing that I wanted to mention, the surprise cut. I don't even know who the candidate would be on this team. They're all so young.
Yeah, so sorry, I should have been more clear. I don't think there's a surprise cut, so to speak.
Surprise move or whatever.
Just a surprise move. And I'm with you. There's nothing that really screams out to me unless like they make some sort of trade where they're like, you know, if they do want to go out and get a big time wide receiver, do they look at the room and be like, and say like, hey, maybe we should get something in return for Romeo Doubs. Like he's got 1 year left on his deal. Sure. Do we want to get a fourth or fifth round pick in return for him or whatever you can get, open up that spot, go get a big time wide receiver and let it be more that new guy plus Wicks plus, you know, Reed and then, you know, probably another draft pick. And then you hopefully get Watson back at some point and that kind of solidifies a little bit more. I don't necessarily think so, but that could be something where maybe something to that ilk.
Yeah. I was trying to think like even a surprise cut. I'm like, I don't even know. And yeah. I'm just in my mind. I'm like, even an outlandish one, like who would a player who, and I don't even know. They're just so young and they're stable. And look, it might not seem at the end of this year, like the Packers are in this awesome spot relative to the Vikings and the Lions. The Packers might just not have as much talent, but at least they're stable. At least they know what they're going into for the most part with into next season. You just can't say that about the Vikings and the Lions. And maybe they figure it out and they're awesome. Maybe they're even better next year. It's definitely possible. But the Packers have a lot fewer question marks. And I think it's easier to operate from that point. And I guess the last thing, you know, you mentioned what are their draft priorities. It's got to be so much cornerback, right? Like it's got to be. And again, I would say edge rusher. Well, they got to get a pass rush. But it's clear that they just told us that they thought that that was on coaching, that that can be fixed with an adjustment to the coaching or the scheme. They expected this unit to be better. So I think it's just got to be a lot of corner. That would be where it starts and mostly ends. And look, they got to find some speedy guy to be Christian Watson at wide receiver, it would seem, right?
I want to end where with that kind of question of where they spend their money, because I think this is an interesting one, because I think you can like look the four key food groups here, right, are corner, pass rusher, offensive line and wide receiver. If you were to say like the four main ingredients that they kind of need to upgrade, those are probably the four that everyone would point to at this point in time. A little bit of depth at linebacker, maybe a run stopping defensive tackle, some things like that added in there, sure. But the four ones: pass rusher, corner, offensive line, and wide receiver. So let's kind of like you kind of take at it, you know, little bit by bit, right? And you could look at corner and say like the clear and obvious way that they're going to upgrade that is via the draft. They already have, you know, Carrington Valentine and Keyshawn Nixon. They just said that they like those guys on the outside. They'll have a decision to make on Jair Alexander bringing back an Eric Stokes or not, which I don't think happens. And then you've got Javon Bullard in the slot, but it just seems like that's going to be a classic. We're going to spend a second and a fifth round pick or something like that and bring in some more talent along there. Maybe a veteran free agent, like cheaper kind of deal, just to kind of bring in a body to compete at that spot. But it doesn't feel like that's necessarily going to be the spot where they go out and spend big money. I'll come back to pass rusher in just a moment. Offensive line, I don't know, again, that, you know, Green Bay is going to feel like they need to go invest a massive contract into an offensive lineman. I think they're going to feel like, hey, we've got Rashid Walker at left tackle. We've got Jordan Morgan, Elton Jenkins, and Sean Ryan who can play the three interior spots, even if Josh Myers is gone, and Zach Tom at right tackle. We've got a starting five. We might need some depth there. We probably need to restock that cupboard a little bit via the draft as well. But I don't think they're going to go out and get like a Trey Smith or something crazy like that. I don't think they're going to spend crazy money at a position where they probably feel like they have five starters at, for better or worse.
They let other teams do that. They're the team that lets other teams pay for their linemen. Yeah,
that's incorrect. Like wide receiver, I'm still not ultra convinced that Green Bay is going to go first round wide receiver or spend massive money or a big trade on a wide receiver. Maybe, but like, I don't think T. Higgins is going to come. Maybe there's the reunion with Devontae Adams. Maybe there's something like that, but I still, that's going to be one that I kind of see when I believe. And then you look at pass rusher and it's like, they're outside of, again, the Max Crosby conversation. I don't think Mason Crosby is what we saw at pass rusher last year for Green Bay. We need Max Crosby at pass rusher. No offense, Mason. I love you. But yeah, I think, you know, is there that 1A pass rusher that's on the market? You know, I don't think Milton Williams or Josh Sweat necessarily passes that sniff test, as spending that, you know, being that guy that you want to spend a ton of money on to be a difference maker. So like you sort of get in this bizarro no man's land of, again, where do they spend that money? I think it's somewhere. I really, really do. But how creative they are with that and what they actually go about spending it on is to me going to be ultra interesting, because you can kind of make counterpoints to each of those positions and be like, here's why they won't spend money at that position.
It's hard to think of a wide receiver that fits their needs that's going to be available for that number, unless you want to go like how much did the Chiefs pay Hollywood Brown? I don't even know off the top of my head.
Yeah, he does not even feel like their typical, you know, flavor of wide receiver, so to speak. Maybe I'm wrong, but it just doesn't feel that way. I don't know.
MVS reunion. I saw who threw that out. I think it was
Zach Cruz, maybe.
Yeah, that's right.
It was Zach Cruz.
Which people did not react to positively. I don't know. It's hard for me to think of a wide receiver that would fit the price, probably a shorter term deal. I just T. Higgins, for whatever reason, Max Crosby, I'm manifesting that in my mind and am convinced it's going to happen. And T. Higgins, it's like not a chance. I mean, what are you, a child to think that that's possible? I don't know why there's such a disconnect in my brain. I don't know. So your point is, where are they going to spend the money? Because it doesn't make sense to spend anywhere on anyone.
I just think there's not a clear and obvious one. Like, there's multiple positions that I can make strong argument. Like, again, those four positions, offensive line, pass rusher, corner and wide receiver, you can all make strong arguments for. I just can also see, and like, clearly there's a red herring somewhere here, right? Because they're going to do something. But I just don't know which one it is, because I could see Green Bay looking at each of those and being like, well, there's either not a player that makes sense, or we actually feel better about the position than maybe the fans do. I don't know.
I don't know. It's great to talk about. Well, you have some money until you have to figure out how to try to spend it.
Then and sometimes, like, even Goode said this in his press conference, right? Like, sometimes there's a Josh Jacobs and a Xavier McKinney and it just makes perfect sense and you go get those guys. Other times it doesn't quite fit the way that you want it to. I mean, all I'm saying is I'm intrigued to see they're going to spend something. I don't think I would be stunned. The biggest shocker to me would be if Green Bay just sat on their hands and is like, actually, we're just going to save this money for when Zach Tom and some other free agents need that money down the line. I would be stunned if Green Bay does that. But looking at it and just, again, taking a glance at it so far, I'm struggling more this time being like, oh my goodness, this is such a clear and obvious, you know, decision, go get this guy and you're good, you're golden. And I don't see that quite yet.
Sitting on the money seems less likely, to your point about what Goody said at the end of his presser. He didn't have to say that. He didn't have to say anything like that. General managers, unless it's Jerry Jones, he's like, we're all in. Like, general managers don't say anything they don't have to. So
it's funny because it's a very thinly veiled, like, I'm not going to give you any information the entire press conference as much as possible. And then like, oh, by the way, we need to have a huge sense of urgency and we need to win a championship. It's like, okay. Yeah. All right. Well, you tell us how you really feel, Brian.
I like it because I weirdly got an opposite sense from LaFleur's presser on the outside. I'm like, this seems a little laughy, jokey. What a weird year. It's like, no, you guys kind of disappointed down the stretch. Like, I didn't get an intensity from LaFleur, and whatever, it's a press conference. But I liked hearing that comment from Gutekunst going into the offseason, because I don't think the Packers had this train wreck of a season. But it didn't get off the ground at the end, like I know a lot of people were kind of hoping for. And to hear that from Goody, I think that's nice messaging. And it's nice messaging to the fan base, if nothing else. But it would be really weird for him to say it if he didn't at least have some idea of some things he was working on for the offseason.
Well said, my friend. Grant, you're the absolute best. I love these conversations. Where can we find all of your incredible work, and what do you got cooking this week?
Incredible is strong. The Wisco Sports Show, 4 to 6, on radio stations in La Crosse, Eau Claire, Madison. It streams on YouTube, Facebook, and on my Twitter at Wisco Grant. What do I have cooking for the rest of the week? I'm just trying to find an excuse to talk baseball, because CeCe Sabathia made the Hall of Fame, and I love talking baseball this time of year. But other than that, just trying every day to spin Max Crosby to the Packers. That's really what I'm working on. And it's, you know, it's live radio, so you talk about what's going on, which is why I like live radio. So that's kind of what my deal is from 4 to 6 every night.
Was it, if I'm remembering this correctly, I like to think that I am. Now I want to look this up really quick. The CeCe Sabathia first start, or maybe it wasn't the first one. I was at one of his first starts where he was dominant. It was a 1-0 game, and I think he hit the lone home run also to give them the 1-0 game. Something to that extent. My memory is not always the best with that, but it was one of his very first starts in Milwaukee, and he hit a home run, and he was dominant as a pitcher, and I was there for it. And it was like, man, I can't even begin to explain just how cool that run was and how special of a player he was. That trade was epic, and what he did for the Brewers, especially down the stretch, pitching on 3 days rest, like almost the entirety of the second half. I think he, of course, you know, come playoff time, by of course, like ran out of a little bit of gas, but well, man, just a legend, you know, end of season run for Sabathia in Milwaukee at that point in time. Was very, very happy to get there for a couple games and saw the one where he hit the home run. And that was legendary. What a deserving Hall of Fame career for sure.
Well, and with Euchre's passing, you know, over the last week, especially as a radio producer too, like I'm cutting all these highlights and I'm listening to all these memories. I'm like, God, I miss baseball. It's the middle of January. And like, I went to the Euchre statue on Saturday, see all, you know, all the beer, the cans of beer that have been set out. And I'm like, I need baseball season to start. I just look forward to it so much. So especially now that the Packers are done and the NFL season is winding down. So that's kind of what's going on my show. But obviously a ton of Packers talk this time of year, anytime is warranted for sure.
Follow him on Twitter at Wisco Grant. Check out the Wisco Sports Show. It's absolutely fantastic. Again, you can follow him on social media at Wisco Grant. You can find me at Andy Herman NFL. You can find the podcast at Packaday Podcast. That's going to do it for Grant tonight today. But until next time, and as always, go Pack, go.